Hello and welcome to the latest podcast from the Chartered Institute of Internal Auditors. I'm Chris Baker, the Institute's Technical Manager, and I have Martin Robinson with me today. Martin is a consultant who delivers many training courses for the Institute and is a reviewer on our external quality assessments. Hi, Martin.
Hi. How are you, Chris?
For most internal auditors, communicating results on an audit means a written audit report. Are there any other options that internal auditors could use?
I think more often now, executives and senior management are looking for something in addition to a report, maybe a presentation or facilitated discussion. So the requirement nowadays to produce a huge lengthy report in some organisations is either complemented or supplemented by some sort of facilitated presentation or workshop which will enable much further discussion. So it's not just sending out a report and looking for actions, it's actually discussing those with the auditee and coming up with consensus on the way forward and the extent to which change can be implemented. So it's a much more positive approach than a bit of paper going backwards and forward or an email going backwards and forward. So that's a much more positive approach for internal auditors, I think.
Are you seeing a move away from audit reports, or is that really the stock in trade still?
I think still it's a stock in trade because auditors and businesses are still comfortable with an email or a bit of paper. But I think the more proactive organisations are looking something beyond that now to have the opportunity to share ideas, to agree actions mutually, rather than just respond to a document and then go backwards and forwards.
Right.
So I think it's getting to be more complementary. But I also feel that internal auditors should offer that as a possible output, not wait for management, but actually suggest to management, maybe there's other ways we can communicate our results, maybe there's ways we can be more efficient to communicate these results, which will be beneficial from both an audit and a business point of view. So I think it's an audit role also to suggest potential alternatives as well, and not just produce the standard report, which we've done for many years.
That's interesting. I noticed you mentioned the word efficiency there. Is that what's driving the subtle change?
I think it is, really, because in these economic times, and whichever function you work in, the need to demonstrate value and to be efficient is really important. And I think internal audit is part of this as well. And if we can demonstrate in what we do, we're cost-efficient, time-efficient, I think that's very good from a reputation point of view, a professional point of view, etc. So I think auditors can drive this as well as waiting for management to say, could you do this for us? And maybe it starts off with a complementary workshop rather than a supplementary. So I think that's potentially the way forward, and I think we can offer that as a service.
Okay. Does that mean the content of the communication changes? What should internal auditors include in their communications when they've completed an audit engagement?
I've always personally felt that often auditors tend to produce something which passes the weight test. So if one produces an audit report which is 70 pages long, it must really be a good audit. And I think that's in some ways a protection because you can't blame an auditor that's produced a lot of paper. However, I think businesses are looking for something which pulls out the wood from the trees and identifies key issues. So I think what executives are looking for is something much more focused, which identifies the key issues, the key problems. Mm-hmm. And also, more importantly, if the audit team can actually identify the root causes. So maybe there's 15 audit points, but if you analyse why those issues arose, it's all because of the same problem. And if when we produce the report we can in some ways summarise what the key issues are and discuss those with management, then I think it's a much more positive approach. So in answer to your question, Chris, I think if we can identify the key risk issues, the key actions that need to be taken, and prioritise those, that's what executives are most interested in. They're not interested in there's 50 low priority points that should be actioned in the future, and that could well be an appendix.
Okay.
But what they're particularly interested in are the things that will make a difference to their business, their organisation, etc., and things they should really focus on immediately. So I think that's what I tend to do.
Right.
And many audit reports still are the weight angle rather than the...
I understand what you're saying. I think there's some maybe basic elements as well that you would need to keep in there. The standards always say you should always refer to the objectives and scope. But I think you're right. I think conclusions and recommendations are very important. But would you say that every communication of results should include an opinion? Is that important?
Again, from a personal point of view, I think that's what we're employed to do. But in my experience, auditors are sometimes quite scared of doing it. I mean, if you're expressing an opinion, it's what it actually says it is. It's an opinion. So we could be wrong. But after we've done the audit and we stand back from the audit, we give an opinion of whether things are generally okay or not. But this isn't written in some sort of audit jargon, but written in straightforward English, which says what's okay, what's not okay, what does the business need to worry about, and are we generally happy or not?
Yeah.
And that doesn't affect your career by doing that. But in my experience, auditors are quite scared of doing that, because if they happen to be wrong, then what's the impact? And the impact is actually nothing. It's just that you're expressing your professional view of things which are good and bad. And I think that's a great way forward. But many audit reports I see are still hidden in audit jargon. Controls generally appear to be satisfactory, subject to the foregoing, which means not a lot to executives, really. Is that good? Is that bad? Is it indifferent? And we don't really know. So I think an opinion is what we're actually paid to do. That's what stands us out as a profession, rather than people are just providing a local service, I think.
Yeah, the Global Institute produced a really good practice guide on how to give opinions, and I would recommend that to everyone. But that suggests that you should give an opinion at the year end as well.
Well, I would have thought so. I mean, what I often suggest, which is my personal view, is if you are travelling up in the lift with the CEO of your organisation or the chief executive or senior manager, and they said to you, Martin, Chris, you've just completed an audit in this area, could you tell me what it was like? And you start off by going, subject to the foregoing, we felt that during our audit things were generally satisfactory. You wouldn't say that, would you? What you'd actually say is, in this audit, the strategy is very clear there, but really, because of the new IT system, they've got major problems, which has really impacted on customer service, which they need to address. Otherwise, that's going to affect your financial results next year. And we've made recommendations which will address some of those issues. So what you're doing is telling the CEO something which is actually useful. And that's the way I would sell it. And the executive summary or the opinion is the most difficult bit to write, because you're expressing a view. You're standing back and saying, what do we really think after all this? And this is written in English in the way people can understand, not some sort of audit technical jargon.
Well, I think you've hit on something really important, actually, because most internal auditors have 2 or 3 minutes when they go along to an audit committee to present the results of an audit.
Correct.
And that can be quite challenging in its own right. How do you prepare for something like that? Or should you prepare for something?
Well, I think you should. But again, you should put yourself, I think, in the shoes of the people you're presenting to. What do they want to hear? What are the sort of things going to impact on them? And what you're going to build out, again, a bit like my comment before, is the priority items, the things they need to worry about, the showstoppers, stuff you've seen outside the organisation in the sector, other things you've seen outside the sector which could impact what the business is doing. So what you end up doing is presenting a very focused view of the particular audit or the summary of the quarter or the year you're doing, which will actually excite management. And I use that word deliberately, is that we should be exciting management about the sort of things we're doing. Mm-hmm. You know, this is a hugely valuable role we're doing for the organisation.
So
and that's what we should be demonstrating.
Would you prepare yourself some notes in advance, and would you rehearse it? And
definitely.
Are there other things that you
definitely
do?
I would. I'd share it with colleagues within the team. I might do a little role play. I might actually find out who's actually coming to that particular board or audit committee and just put myself in their shoes, especially if maybe we're criticising one of the people sitting around the table. We want to be very careful how we present that in the 3 or 5 minute or 10 minute slot. So I think careful preparation is very important. But more important, when you're there, come across as a professional in the way you present it, the body language, any slides you produce is done in a very professional way, because you're the ambassador for the unit you head up or you work for. So I think the preparation is key with this. I think the idea you could wing it at that level is totally unacceptable, because that's the way you're going to come across. And also, that's not very respectful for the people you're presenting to.
And I guess you might kind of think about questions you might get asked as well and kind of prepare answers in your head, if not all written down.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with you, Chris. I mean, thinking about the sort of things you might be asked beforehand should be a preparation you do for any sort of close-out or facilitated presentation as well. Just to make sure that the auditee is going to ask you the sort of things, do some preparation on the sorts of key issues they might ask you, have some papers with you if necessary. But you don't want to get bogged down with detail if you're doing something at that sort of level.
Okay.
But you need to be quite clear of what you're trying to present, and also communicate the message very clearly, I think.
We've kind of touched on do's and don'ts a little bit. Are there typical mistakes that you see in the work that you do when auditors communicate results? What are the most common things that you see?
I think really that the main issue is what we started off with, Chris, is the not actually reaching a summary and conclusion and not looking at the bigger picture and just summarising the weaknesses. Auditors sometimes be a bit scared of actually making recommendations, and there's still a huge debate about whether an internal auditor should make a recommendation, or whether that's management's responsibility. I personally believe still there's an audit role to suggest what the changes should be and actually reach an agreement with management, but I know some people in the profession would possibly disagree with that. But I think our objective of the audit isn't producing a report, it's actually encouraging change in the organisation. So my success criteria is because of the work we've done, something different has happened, the business has changed, more risks have been managed, controls have been improved. It's not that we've issued the audit report, yeah. It's as a result of the report something has happened. And that's the way I'd always look at the output from an auditee's point of view. Is this value? Does this make a change? The 3 or 4 weeks the auditor might have spent there with the time they spent and the cost they spent.
So in your mind then, there's a difference between the output of an audit engagement and the outcome. Can you just expand on that a little bit?
I think a lot of auditors I've come across regard the output as the audit report. And when the audit report's been issued, that's the job done.
Yeah.
But actually the job is only done once all the actions have been cleared satisfactorily, which could be 2 months, 3 months, 6 months, a year on. And so the outcome would be the business has changed for the better, or things are being looked at differently, which isn't when you've issued the audit report, it's sometime later. But the measurement of the success, I think, is with the outcome.
Right.
Not that you've necessarily issued the report with a certain number of points, but how has change been instituted later on? So that's more difficult to measure. But I've also experienced many times that people believe as soon as the audit report's issued, that is job done. And in fact, that's only about a third of the way
through. So does that affect the nature of the recommendations that you might make as well? That thinking about those outcomes might influence the way you write the report?
I think it really does, really. And I think it's the way you are selling audit in your particular organisation. Are you an audit department that's actually very proactive, that's part of the fabric of the organisation, which is, a change agent? Or are you just a reactive department that sorts out problems, identified weaknesses? I always use the quote that organisations get the internal audit departments they deserve. So if you actually want an internal audit department that's proactive, that's strategic, that's demonstrating and delivering change, that's what we should be doing. But all too often I still think audit departments are quite reactive. They feel their main role is to identify problems and not really to make a difference in what they're doing. And that links into the whole audit process, plus obviously importantly in the report you finally issue as well. So I think the way you think about the audit role is all important, Chris.
Yeah.
And that will lead through the whole process, but most importantly,
I was going to say if you're thinking about outcomes in the organisation and how the audit influences change, that starts at actually a very early stage in the audit. The final communication or the report is just something that the audit committee see. What are the stages beforehand that help you have a successful audit engagement then?
Well, I think it starts off at the beginning of the year or the beginning of the period when you're actually planning the whole range of audit assignments for the year. And I think the way you do your annual planning, the way you get auditee buy-in, the way you share risks, sets up your stall for the whole year. And I think then each individual audit fits into that plan. And all the work you did at the beginning of the year to identify which are your priority risks to look at, the priority assignments, by way of looking at the universe or the risk database, etc., should flow through. So I believe your effective communication starts very early. And when indeed you start your audit assignment, it's part of the whole audit plan. So you should really be hitting the ground running with all the information you've gained at the beginning of the year. So when you scope your audits and talk to the auditee, your both sides are very ready for the sorts of things you're going to be covering. So it shouldn't be a great surprise. And that's the same with the whole process all the way through. It should be no surprises. And you should be sharing issues. And after all, we all work for the same organisation. So the idea that it's a process of antagonism is completely wrong. We're actually partners in the process, all have the same objective within the organisation. So, you know, put ourselves in the auditee's shoes as well. How would we like to be treated all the way through from the point of view of planning the audit, the individual audit work that's carried out, when you identify issues? And the auditee should actually know how they're going to be communicated to throughout the whole process. So if there's key issues, you'll be told straight away. If there's something that particularly worries you, we'll jot it down. But don't worry, we'll keep you fully informed. So when they get the draft report, actually, there should be no surprises at all because everything's been shared with different people. Then it becomes a consensus type approach of, given these issues, do we agree with them? And how can we address them and change things? So
I think
whole process is a consultancy with a small C. But a lot of audit departments still regard it as a battle. Why is that? Well, partly because the business thinks it's a battle, and partly because the auditor thinks it's a battle. But you start with these entrenched positions, and it does result in a battle which isn't satisfactory or positive for anyone. So I think if we can work with the business and they work with us, the whole process is positive, the output is brilliant, and it sets our reputation in the organisation at a very high level. So I think it's actually a no-brainer. I hate that expression, but it is.
Okay, I think that's really useful advice. Would you go so far as to say you should establish what the communication process is before the audit really begins? Because, as you say, it helps people.
Absolutely right. But I think also the communication process should start well before any audit carries on anyway. Audit should have a relationship with the businesses they audit outside the standard audit process, from the point of view of keeping in touch with what the business is doing, the sort of change processes, new products, new systems. And so once you've got the relationship with the senior people in the particular business, the audit becomes part and parcel of that relationship. However, problems come when the first relationship is when we plan an audit, because originally you start with the auditors coming to review, there's a defensive position. So I think communication starts right at the top, which is irrelevant of any audit assignment, which is an ongoing relationship. And then we build trust between us both. And that's the key to it all, I think, Chris, is that there's a trust on both sides. And that trust isn't built when you're doing an audit, but when you're talking to people and sharing issues.
It sounds to me, Martin, that you do need to have those traditional skills that auditors have always been aware of, like writing skills and being able to present things in a concise and clear way. But what you're saying to me is that they probably ought to think about other skills, things like negotiating, influencing, those sorts of things. Am I right in that?
Very much so, I think. I mean, I've come across very good technical auditors in the past who have produced very good technical audit reports. But when they come to sell it or discuss it with management, they completely collapse. And so they might have the best points ever produced and great recommendations. But as soon as they go to a meeting, they collapse. So I think you're absolutely right. The balanced auditor has all those skills, but also has the negotiation, the convincing, the influencing, the presentation and facilitation. And what I always suggest to people is just try it for the first time. Particularly this starts with presentation skills. Any auditor should be a good presenter. Send yourself on a presentation skills course. Although it might be quite scary, it gives you a huge amount of confidence. That's really how I started. And once you're confident with presenting, you'll find you're confident with facilitating, leading, influencing. So that, I think, leads in. And I know I've heard the quote, people would rather die than present. But really, I think presentation is a key skill for an auditor, because you're doing it all the time and you're presenting yourself. So I'd start off with that. And then it just develops. And everyone can be a good presenter. It's a skill you can learn. People aren't born presenters. They learn how to do it. Now, I think that's part of it. And all these skills you mentioned, Chris, I think flow from that.
Just a final question, Martin. Where do you think communicating results will go in the future? Will be talking about the same things in 5 years' time if we were to come back?
I think we will be, but I think the way we're going to be communicating is going to be different. And I think boards and executives want something that's a bit sharper now. And if you like, look like when they get a consultant in, they don't necessarily expect a 50-page report. They want something more focused. Maybe there's an appendix, which is the detail. But I think more and more they're looking for a facilitated presentation, maybe a workshop, maybe interactive actions are built during that workshop. So if I was a betting man, I think that's the way we're going to be going in the future. And I think in many ways the traditional type of report may be needed by certain organisations, but the more proactive ones are looking for something a tiny bit different, I believe.
Okay, well, thank you very much for joining us today. That's a really sort of good insight, and hopefully we'll have a chance to have a talk on another subject sometime.
You're very welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.